From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Everyone, and welcome to week two of Rock Month. This is Hunter Deucing in Dallas, Texas, and I am joined by Stuart Bulk in Australia, in Melbourne. Say hello, Stu.
Hello, and we just had the presence graced by the individual who we're talking about tonight, the other week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, about less than 2 weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I haven't seen him live, but I'll get to that. And joining us also in the Rocky Mountain Hive, Colorado, is bass John Gray. Say hello, John.
Hello.
Did you just say Lewis hello?
No.
Okay.
No, I rarely say that.
No, I was going to say, I thought, what's happened? Are you starting
only
to...
Only if I talk to Lewis Armstrong, that's about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this week... Our pick, my pick, I should say. This is my pick for Rock Month. It's my turn.
Yeah, because okay. I never heard of this guy.
Really?
I never heard of him.
No?
No.
Oh, because my pick this week is Glenn Hughes. But he's been in so many bands, and he's done so many things that I kind of did a curated album list. For Glenn, and so we've got about seven records we're going to look at, but we've talked about Glenn before on the show, and I think this was the pre-John era.
It's funny because I only really know of him as one of the many members of Deep Purple, which is a band I don't think we could ever do for Rock Month because they're actually
Doing any of the Deep Purple records just because they're well known, they're traveled. You know, we're going to do other stuff,
and there's the sound of a ton of iPods being clicked off once we said that. It's like, no Deep Purple, forget it. Stick around. You're going to be interested into his other stuff because there is lots of it.
There is lots. I mean, Glenn Hughes is well-traveled in the world of rock. In fact, I mean, he is known as the voice of rock in Europe. That's his nickname.
Yeah.
He's very revered in Europe. Not so much in the States. Although... when his first band, Trapeze, really broke, they broke in Texas. That's where they got their huge audience, was when they were touring for the Medusa record. And in Texas, like, the audience there really latched onto them, and Texas became, like, their big market.
That's usually because a DJ would dig them and would play the stuff constantly, when the DJs had control of the playlist and it wasn't the manager of the radio station.
Texas, the place that helped launch Trapeze's career and Monty Python's as well on UHF over there.
Very true. Yeah.
The PBS station took a chance on Monty Python, I think in the Dallas-Fort Worth area or Houston, I forget. And I think it was Wes Anderson's? No, it was the Wilson brothers' father.
Yeah, it was.
Who took a chance on Monty Python. Well, it's just like AC/DC broke in the U.S. in Florida. There was a Jacksonville DJ that loved their albums and played them because before that they were marketed as punk. And one Florida DJ changed everything and they became the rock band.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wish you had thrown that tidbit up during the ACDC Rock Month. Unless you did.
I thought I did.
Oh, you, you probably have. I haven't heard it since we did it.
Yeah, so. I mean, well, supposedly when they got to Jacksonville, they were stunned to find out they were playing a Coliseum. They were like, what? You know, we have this many fans?
So,
before
but,
that, they were opening for the Dictators. So, it's like shit.
But so this is the second week in a row we have an artist John's pretty much unfamiliar with, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, Stuart, what about you with Glenn Hughes? I mean, I think, you know, you and I both are big fans.
Yes.
So where does your fandom with Glenn Hughes begin?
With Deep Purple's Burn. Because another album Dad had in the cupboard there was Deep Purple's Burn. And I listened
to
it.
And that's the only one I know.
Well, I did see him as well, not live, but I mean, I did see him on the VHS tape I had of Deep Purple live at the California Jam 74. And I even tweeted to Glenn Hughes as well that all it was this young guy with his, like, hair everywhere. He's like this mountain of hair on him. But yeah, that was it. And then I just saw his name crop up obviously over the years in the Black Sabbath Seventh Star, which we're talking about today. And sort of fell off my radar again until Hunter really brought me back to it with Black Country Communion.
Yeah, I did. I remember you were over here in Dallas, and I threw on the live DVD. And we were watching Black Country live, and Stuart was just kind of sitting there. And I was kind of going, is he digging this? And I was like, you liking this? You want me to turn it off? And you were like, no.
No, that's if I'm statuesque, I'm enjoying it. I'm just really weird that way.
You were like,
now we know this about Stu.
Oh yeah,
Stuart was like digging it, but
that's odd. I mean, your sort of assumption is like, oh, Stu ain't liking this, but no, I'm very. If I'm not moving, I'm enjoying it. That's just take
right.
That. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, what's funny about Deep Purple is they're often cited as a big influence on Metallica. And, you know, they say, oh, you know, Lars Ulrich's first concert was Deep Purple and blah, blah, blah. But when you see it recounted, you know, they usually talk about it in the term of Mark II with Ian Gillan and
Roger Glover.
Yeah.
But Lars has said that the version of Deep Purple he saw was Mark III with David Coverdale and Glenn Hughes. And he did the intro to Glenn Hughes' autobiography. And he was talking about how seeing Glenn Hughes live was like, you know, with Deep Purple was had a massive impact on him.
Oh, he looked cool as fuck. Mm-hmm. Deep Purple for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where I'm kind of shocked they didn't just settle on him as a front man and just like consolidate bass and vocals, you know.
That band is odd. Deep Purple is like the strangest managed band. Like, it's really hard to grasp their history and like really get into them. Like, I think they'd be as popular as something like Sabbath if they were more consistent, but they're all over the place.
Yeah, they really are. I remember asking Glenn Hughes on Facebook if he had any good Ritchie Blackmore stories or something from recording Bird, and Glenn Hughes was just like scouring the shit out of me, and he replied to my comment, and he had the like suspicious eyes emoji.
Oh, he's the emoji king, Glenn Hughes.
Yeah. Yeah, Glenn, every post Glenn Hughes does on Facebook and Twitter is just like full of emojis.
Yeah.
Glenn Hughes, you know, he's been in a ton of bands, but the band that kind of got him the Deep Purple gig was a group called Trapeze. And out of England. And they did a self-titled first record in 1970 that I've actually never listened to, but it almost looks like a Genesis album or something when you look at the cover. And it was like, you know, had a bunch of members, you know, I think it was like a four or five person band. but someone that album didn't. Yeah, there was like a flute, a flautist, like like Peter Gabriel. There was like, yeah, there's like organs and, you know, like a trumpet,
Mellotron, whatever.
Yeah. It was like, it was more proggy, I guess. I've never listened to it, but when looking at the lineup and the overall feel of the record, I mean, Glenn Hughes kind of said it didn't really work out, and then they turned it into a power trio, and they did the first album we're going to talk about, which is Medusa from 1970, came out late 1970, and this is the album that they that sort of broke them in the States, in Texas, and it was it, the members on the album, you have Glenn Hughes on bass, vocals, and piano, Mel Galley on guitar and vocals, and Mel Galley would have a storied career of his own. He's no longer with us. And Dave Holland on drums. And the track listing is...
Well, it's Judas Priest's Dave Holland as well.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, Pedophile, yeah. Dave Holland.
Oh, really? That's that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on the Depp sessions that Glenn Hughes did with Tony Iommi. And when they officially released it, they re-recorded his drums because they didn't want him on the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were like, oh, we don't want a sex offender on our album.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I didn't know that. I didn't know that was that same guy.
Yep.
So you have seven tracks on this one. You have Black Cloud, Jury, Your Love Is All Right, Touch My Life, Seafull, Makes You Want to Cry, and the self-titled track Medusa. And so, John, this is your first time hearing Trapeze. I want to know what you think.
I only listened to it once. I was really surprised by how much soul music influence there was. Mm-hmm. And when I was listening to it, I did not know it was released in 1970. I thought it was like a 74 or 75 type thing. And because I didn't really research these when I was listening to them. I just wanted to hear them fresh. And it was interesting. It's kind of a reminder of how diverse and soul music influence a lot of what was considered hard rock was back then. Like, yeah. And I could see it hitting big in Texas because it's very akin to Texas bands like Blood Rock, who are a great, great band. I would highly recommend listening to them. And and of course, I think the Winter Brothers are from Texas, aren't they? Edgar and Johnny?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you can see where a lot of that, how they would have gotten over big in Texas pretty easily. They could have been mistaken for an American band. There's a lot of Al Green influence or whatever. I don't know if Al Green was releasing a lot at that time, but it's definitely a similar style. So yeah, I was surprised. I was expecting like crazy ass psychedelic Deep Purple type stuff or something, or the Seeds. But yeah, it was.
Well, and what I think is funny about this album, as opposed to some of the other Glenn Hughes stuff, is how, I mean, and you know, Glenn Hughes, his discography is pretty eclectic, but this one, I think this album is pretty eclectic. You have Black Cloud, which sounds like a kind of Southern rock almost.
Mm.
You have Jury, which is like, which could be a Black Sabbath song. And then you have Your Love Is All Right. You have Touch My Life. And, you know, you have these songs that are very soul influenced, and you cap it off with Medusa, which also kind of has the doom metal, the proto doom type influence.
Yeah. I definitely want to say, Hunter, it's more soul than blues. Like a lot of hard rock is blues influence. This is soul influence, which
it really is. I think the next record even more so.
Definitely.
But this one definitely, it's kind of a mix of. You know, metal, country rock, blues, I mean, and soul. And I think it's an interesting mix that I like quite a bit. Stuart, what do you think?
I do like it. I didn't know what to expect from Trapeze. I had known the name, obviously.
Oh, you hadn't listened to him?
No, I'd never heard him.
Really?
No, just one of those things. Like I said, Glenn just fell off my radar, and I remember him being from Trapeze because there was it was set on the actual California Jam. Oh, thanks to Trapeze for the new artists and Dave Coverdale and the guy from Trapeze, Glenn Hughes. I'm like, oh, I know the name, but Dad never owned their album, so I never sort of.
Yeah, I've got a lot of Trapeze on vinyl.
Oh, the hell you say.
And what's funny is when I worked at the record store, when I worked at CD Source, you would get people coming in all the time looking for trapeze stuff, and they were always like older guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they have like a following here.
They have their denim.
Well, it's like I'm sure if you're in Michigan, like you'll run into old guys who are into bands like the Rationals or Frigid Pink, you know, if they were big there at one time.
Or well, the Amboy Jukes.
Yeah. Yeah, shit. Yeah. but yeah, I mean, you're going to have those guys who saw him when they were hippies and, you know, made quite an impression. Especially if Trapeze played Texas quite a bit. I bet they did.
After Glenn left the band, they actually did a live in Texas album called Dead Armadillos.
Of course.
With actually Mel Galley, who does sing on this album, I think on one of the songs or two of the songs he does vocals, but he actually took over vocal duties and played in another David Coverdale band, Whitesnake. He was in Whitesnake for a while.
Oh, the early version of Whitesnake, was it?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's where the name sounds familiar.
Mm.
All right.
I guess let's rate and give our favorite tracks. John, what was your favorite track and what rating would you give?
I'm going to say Medusa because, like you said, it's proto-doom metal, and that was more in tune of what I expected to hear. But I think the album's overall pretty much – it's worth listening to just because it's different. But yeah, I'd give it like a 6. It's a solid 6.
What was your favorite track? Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, I said Medusa. Like the title track was pretty good, and I liked Jury quite a bit. So yeah. I mean, there's a couple of good tunes on here. It's just I like the next album much more. I'll go ahead and give that away. So
okay,
yeah, seemed a little more defined as to what they were going to be. But yeah, it's worth listening to.
Stuart, what about you?
It's a 6 again for me. Like John said, but my favorite's Makes You Want to Cry. I enjoyed that. Yeah. Yeah, for some reason it just stuck with me when I heard it. I thought, oh, I really like this one. But there's others on there. There's like Black Cloud, and I do like Medusa as well.
Yeah.
Makes you want to cry. So I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah, for me, I don't think there's a bad song on this. I mean, I really like this record. I'd give it an 8. And I think that Jury's probably my favorite. Although I really like Medusa, Black Cloud, I like all the songs. I mean, I think Black Cloud is an extremely catchy, fun song. I like the Southern rock vibe. I like it quite a bit.
Nice.
So the next album is from 1972, and this was Glenn's final official release with Trapeze. He does appear on subsequent records, and he did a live record with them. That came much later after he got sober. He left the band after this one, but this was his final official release. It's from 1972, called You Are the Music, We're Just the Band. And
good title, by the way.
Yeah, it is. And that's what all the people who'd come into the record store, they'd be like, oh, we are the music, we're just the band, you know? Like they all like that for some reason that was like their like slogan or something. But same lineup, Glenn Hughes.
Hunter, if it was actually released today, it'll be You Are the Music, We're Just the Band, and then like 500 emojis on the front of the album.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be like a guitar. Crying
and a thumbs up or the okay single,
a peace sign, you know.
Yeah.
But you have Glenn Hughes, Mel Galley, and Dave Holland again, and the track listing is Keep in Time, Coast to Coast, What is a Woman's Role, Way Back to the Bone, Feeling So Much Better Now, Will Our Love End, Loser, and You Are the Music. John, you said you liked this one a lot more. Was your takeaway with this?
It's a stronger funk influence. It's heavier. It sounded more like something I would hear on classic rock radio in 1983 before it became, you know, Zeppelin and, you know, Zeppelin and the Grateful Dead all the time. Classic. If you found a classic rock station in 83, this is what you would hear. It was more unusual stuff like this and the James Gang and Black Oak Arkansas.
Okay.
Yeah, even like the Eagles or something like that.
Right. And you'd hear late 70s Eagles on classic rock, sadly. But I mean, I thought Way Back to the Bone was a pretty good tune.
Oh, Way Back to the Bone is awesome. I love it.
Yeah, it was the bass lines and everything. It's just like, that's where you can really pick up on the whole funk influence. And that's when, you know, that's when Funkadelic and Isaac Hayes were probably required listening for a lot of rock guys. They were secretly listening to them. James Brown, all that stuff.
And
Jimmy Page was stealing licks. You know.
Oh yeah, I think with this album you have a more crystallized vision for the band.
Yeah,
it's definitely more consistent. Like Medusa is very eclectic, and I like that. I like, you know, the eclecticness of it. But this one is very focused. It's got a very specific soul influence. It's very it's very much in that vein. It's a lot jammier too. Stuart, what about you?
Okay, I like this one just a tad less than the previous one. But it's still a good album. It's probably just a little bit over the shop for my liking. And I stress my liking, that's all. I'm not saying as a generalization of it. Just for me, it was just a little bit over the shop. But there is one track on there I just thought was probably the best of the trapeze songs I'd heard. Which I'll get to when we get to ratings and favorites.
All right. For me, this album, I think, it's more consistent. Again, I don't think there's a bad song on it. I think it's a very, very strong record. I think it is kind of a bummer that Glenn left Trapeze after this, and he did make great music with Deep Purple.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not really that bummed out he left Trapeze, because we did get Burn. Well, then we got Stormbringer after that, which is like, ooh.
Yeah, come taste the band and all that. But but Burn is probably, I will say Burn is probably my favorite Deep Purple album.
And I
think, you know, so it's not a bad thing, but it is like you're really seeing the band come into their own here. It's more focused. It doesn't really have any of the heavy metal that you get on Medusa. It's a lot lighter, but that's not a bad thing at all. I think Glenn said that when Deep Purple came calling, he was kind of like, I don't know, but then he saw how much money he'd be making, and he went, all right.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He was like, okay.
It's a no-brainer. You're joining a band. I mean, okay, yeah, you're replacing two integral figures in there, you know, Roger Glover and Ian Gillan. But, I mean, my God, the opportunity of a lifetime, you wouldn't knock it back, especially after coming off of Machine Head. I'm like, yeah, I'd take that.
Yeah, you'd want that gig. And he definitely brought the thunder for Burn, I mean.
Oh, that album's just flawless from start to finish.
Yeah, him and Coverdale just kill it on that.
Who are very close friends to this day, apparently.
Yeah, they are. They are. When Deep Purple got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, there was like with Kiss, there was a lot of drama. But Glenn and you know, when you looked at the stuff, it was just like Glenn and Coverdale just sticking close, thick as thieves, you know, because they're like bros. You know?
Yeah.
They were just like, we're just happy to be here. You know, we're
happy to be here. We're happy Richie Blackmore's not here.
Exactly.
Secretly thinking, I'm guessing anyway.
Yeah, but, he talked about how Richie was a big prankster, how he would play jokes on everybody when they were recording.
Yeah, he's been doing the last 30 years with his Celtic music. It's like the biggest joke of all.
Well, he brought back Rainbow, but it's all new members, so like, who cares?
I heard from somebody. Not directly, but this guy's a huge Rainbow fan. He goes, forget it. It's terrible.
Yeah, it looked real.
Like, yeah, it's not even like the Graham Bonnet.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I even like I like Graham Bonnet a lot, but.
I prefer the Dio version.
Yeah.
Oh, this had me wanted to actually go back and listen to Burn and the Glenn Hughes Deep Purple.
Yeah, don't rush the Stormbringer. It's not that good. I don't think it's that. Apart from the title track, the rest is just.
I think Holy Man's the one that Glenn does all the vocals on, is a really good song.
Yeah, I like Stormbringer. The rest, I've tried and I can't get into it. But yeah, John, go back and listen to Burn, John. Yeah, for sure.
Richie Blackmore said that he left Deep Purple because Coverdale and Hughes just wanted to make black shoe shine music.
Oh shit!
Those were his words, not mine.
And then he moved to Milwaukee.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, yeah. But so John, what was your favorite? What were your favorites on here? And rating.
Let's see. Way Back to the Bone for this Trapeze album, and I'd give it a good 7.
Nice.
And it would probably be higher if I'd listened to it more, but I've only listened to it about twice for the show, so it's new to me.
Stuart, what about you?
Okay, I'm giving it about a 5.5. So it was just a tad under the other one. And my favorite song was Loser. I really liked that a lot.
Oh, that's a good song. Yeah.
It is a great song. Glenn's vocals on that are just fucking wild. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because Glenn Hughes, I think, is an incredible vocalist. And I think the Trapeze albums, I think he only gets better.
Yeah. I was going to say, they don't do him justice to how good this guy is. Because what is he now?
Yeah.
Like 68 or something?
Yeah. He's near 70. Let me see. How old is he? He was born in 52. So, he's 64. Okay.
See, okay, my apologies, 64.
I thought he was older.
Okay. He's just hard because he's been around that long. You think he's older than what he is. But apologies to Glenn Hughes if you are listening somehow. But, we'll get into those albums later ones.
But I think his vocals would only improve from these records. And especially, you know, I remember when I first listened to Medusa, I was like, oh, is that Glenn? You know, it's like, I mean, he sounds good, but he doesn't sound like Glenn, you know?
He's a sort of opposite to a lot of other vocalists who start off really strong and then fade away.
Yeah, he's only gotten better.
Yeah, he started off, you know, competent and strong to a particular point, but then just excelled after that.
Yeah.
So he's in a really sort of rare sort of...
rarefied singer.
Yeah, for sure.
So for me, I'd give this an 8 as well. I think it's a really strong record. I think it's very, very focused. I think it's more focused than the other one, but I like it for different reasons. I mean, I like kind of the eclecticness of that of Medusa, but I also like kind of the band sort of finding their vision here. My favorite is Way Back to the Bone as well, but I also really like songs like Coast to Coast and What is a Woman's Role. Like, I think those are really good songs. Yeah. And if you like this stuff, I really recommend the Glenn Hughes solo Live in Wolverhampton album because he does a set of trapeze songs on there that are he absolutely does like killer versions of them on it. So after this, Glenn would join Deep Purple, and that would kind of cement his reputation. But during this time, Glenn Hughes also really found a fondness for drugs.
I was going to ask you about his book, which you recommended to me numerous times. I must read.
It's really good.
How bad? Because, I mean, even Eddie Trunk has said before that Glenn Hughes is very lucky to be alive. Even Glenn himself has said that. How bad was his addictions?
He had heart attacks.
Ooh.
It was, yeah. I mean, he's had heart attacks. I will say that he nearly... very nearly ruined his career. In fact, the 80s is almost a complete wash for him. Like, it was wasted time. Like, we'll talk about one Glenn Hughes 80s record. There was one I wanted to throw in there because it's kind of obscure, but I didn't want to overload you guys. The Hughes Thrall record. But it really got to the point where he didn't have any money. And his wife divorced him, and he said, you know, when he got into recovery, his ex-wife still will not speak to him. He said he's talked to everyone else. He's wronged, and he said he's kind of made amends with everybody. But he said his ex-wife, it was just that bad. Like she won't talk to him.
Okay.
But you know, it's pretty dark. Like, here's the thing about Glenn Hughes' autobiography: when you read it, it starts off, you know, kind of being what a music fan wants. You get him breaking down all the songs on every record. He's talking about every song on the Trapeze albums, on the Deep Purple albums, on the next album we're going to talk about, which is his first solo record, Play Me Out. But after that, the book really becomes focused on his addiction and recovery. It becomes a book about that. And I think that's disappointing to some people, but I think it's a big thing for him because so much of his life was just wasted on drugs. And
it also shows the resolute of the man who can come through that and continue to forge pretty much a rebirth of a career and a strong career at that as well. So sounds to me like it is an important part of the book.
It is. Like, you're not going to get a breakdown of every single Glenn Hughes solo record. He does talk in detail about the Black Country Communion albums. It doesn't go up to California Breed and some of the later albums we're going to talk about. But it does sort of define him in a way. Like, one of the things that I thought was interesting was he talked about how in the 90s he was sober and he was working very consistently. Like, he was putting out albums very frequently. He was kind of making up for lost time, really, because he's been so active. Like, he's been putting out records like crazy. But he said he fell off the wagon because, like, he got into working out and he started taking GHB.
Oh, boy.
And he said that triggered his addiction. And so he said what he would do is he would go to Dallas, Texas. And he said in the 90s, Dallas was what LA was in the 70s. He said it was a cocaine party town. And he said he would just go to Dallas, he would buy a hotel room, and he would just get off of his mind on cocaine and drugs and whatever else for like a weekend. And then he would sober up and go back to whatever he was doing. And then he stopped doing that, obviously. But he said he fell off the wagon a few times, and Dallas was like, he would like plan it out, like go to Dallas to party. But anyway, so the next record we're going to talk about is his first solo album. And this one was really when his addiction was really bad. It's Play Me Out, 1977. And it has a lot of players on it. Glenn plays most of the instruments, but it does have Mel Galley and Dave Holland from Trapeze on there.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a sort of mini reunion of Trapeze.
Yeah, and you also have Pat Travers on there as well on guitar.
Seriously underrated guitarist as well, Pat Travers.
Yeah, but it has a lot of players on here, and we're not talking about the reissue. I'm just doing the original 9 tracks. There's 14 tracks on the reissue, but the ones we're doing are I Got It Covered, Space High, It's About Time, LA Cutoff, Well, Solution, Your Love Is Like a Fire, Destiny, and I Found a Woman. And Hughes considers this to be one of his finest records. Stevie Wonder was a big fan of this album and said that Glenn Hughes was his favorite white singer.
How would he know he's white?
I know, you wouldn't know listening to this album.
No, you wouldn't know, actually.
Just hearing him and not seeing him. But I think Stevie Wonder was on record saying that Glenn Hughes was his favorite white singer. But Stevie Wonder was a big fan of this record. So Play Me Out. This actually is, as far as Rock Month goes, this is probably the least rock and roll album we'll be covering.
I was going to say, yeah. It's like,
this is not a rock album. This is a full-on soul album, funk and soul. And there's hardly any rock trappings in it. John, I'm curious to know what you thought of this one.
Yeah, it's kind of a surprise, but when it came out, probably the biggest selling group on the radio was the Commodores. So it's not that stunning that
What has happened to my beloved Rock Month? We're now talking about the Commodores.
Yeah, but I mean, no, the Commodores were probably one of the biggest groups in 77, Casey and the Sunshine Band. So this is really sounds like he was just trying to get on top 40 radio, because back then the odds of a rock station in middle America, it was kind of tough. It was just top 40. It was like you would hear Lynyrd Skynyrd 1 minute, then you'd hear Casey and the Sunshine Band the next. It was an odd time. But it just sounds like it's more designed for – this is what you really heard on the radio in 77. I know people watch movies or TV shows set in 77 and act like the Ramones were on the radio, and that's bullshit. It's like it was – this is closer to what you would hear. It was basically white funk.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because disco was getting big. Yeah, disco was getting big. Funk music was pretty huge. And like I said, the Commodores were probably the biggest band around.
77 was all disco and variety shows on television.
Yeah, it blew up. Like, disco was huge, and a lot of this funk music was way more mainstream.
Donny and Marie.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, Kiss was a touring act. Kiss wasn't like a radio act. It was like Kiss was something you went to see.
That's
live.
Very true. Very true. They weren't like all over the radio like people think. That was, that was like a traveling show is what their bag really was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So Stuart, what about you? What do you think?
This is, I'm almost tempted to abstain from rating this because it's just so different than anything else I've ever heard. I knew what it was.
Expected.
No, I knew what it was when I started listening to it. I said, I know this is going to be like a soul album that Glenn did. And I probably shouldn't have listened to other stuff like Resonate beforehand because I'm like, oh, man. You know, and then coming down to play me out. So, I mean, it's all right for me. I'm not knocking the musicianship or the songwriting on it by any stretch of the imagination. Just as a personal thing for me, it's not for me, that's all.
So, I gotcha.
Yeah.
I gotcha. It's just, it's not your type of music. And I knew this is an anomaly, and that's kind of why I picked it. Yeah. But it's one that, you know, if you're a Glenn Hughes fan, it's one you either love or really don't like. I mean, because he didn't really do another album that's quite like this, at least not that I've listened to. I haven't heard every single one of his solo albums. But for me, I mean, I was very impressed by this album when I first heard it. I thought Glenn's vocals were otherworldly on it. And Glenn even talks about that in his book.
He does look like Linda Ronstadt on the front of the album cover, though.
Yeah, he does. I thought it was a very strong album for what he was setting out to do. And I think the reissue also has some really good songs on there, too. But... Yeah, I mean, I like it. It's not the type of music I normally listen to, but I think it is Glenn really flexing his muscles a lot. And I think this is sort of a period where before his drug use really caught up with him, because it was really bad when he was making this album, but it hadn't really completely destroyed his ability to perform, which it would really catch up with him when he did the Black Sabbath record.
Right.
John, I'm curious as to what your rating is for this and what your
favorite song is. Favorite song is L.A. Cutoff, which is track 4. And I thought it had really strong bass lines and everything. And I, as probably the one member of the show who actually listens to a lot of funk and soul music, I thought it was a pretty solid attempt and tribute to that style. And I give it a 7.
Yeah, I would give it a 7 as well. Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and throw mine in there. I think L.A. Cutoff is a really strong song. I also like I Found a Woman quite a bit. I think that one has a real, real passion and feeling behind it. Stuart, you said you're going to abstain, but do you have a like sort of?
No, I will rate it. I was going to abstain because I think it's only fair. Cause, I mean, I have heard it. Look, I'm probably going to give it like a 4, and that's strictly me. That's all.
Right.
It's not the record. It's not.
No, it's not your bag, baby.
It's just not my bag. That's all it is. That's right. It's, and like I said, that don't take my 4 as being, oh, it's a poorly made, poorly written. No. It's all me. That's all it is.
Okay.
I did like LA Cutoff as well. That was the one I took note as being a sort of a highlight for me on there.
Yeah, but, I mean, that's a really fun song. It's hard to dislike that.
I've only heard this once. I say this for me, this is going to have to be something I have to listen to at least 2 to 3 times. At least 3 times, I'd say, to form an appreciation of it. Yeah,
it's really worth revisiting. And the bonus tracks on the reissue are also good too. I didn't put them on there just again in the interest of keeping it simple.
Yeah.
So yeah, Play Me Out. This was his solo record. Now, Glenn's career would get very spotty after this, but the next one we're going to talk about. So this is Black Sabbath's seventh star from 1986. Now this is Black Sabbath featuring Tony Iommi.
This is Black Sabbath and Friends, what it was known as when it came out. Yeah. I remember this one very well.
So Black Sabbath, this was after they did a record with another member of Deep Purple, Ian Gillan, who took over for Dio, yeah. And after he left. And Black Sabbath was kind of at a crossroads at this point because you did not have Geezer Butler, you did not have Bill Ward on this one, and it was just Tony Iommi, and it was supposed to be a Tony Iommi solo record.
Yeah.
But Don Arden's management company insisted on using the Black Sabbath moniker. Now, Glenn Hughes said he did not want to be the lead singer of Black Sabbath. He said that this would not have been a gig he would have wanted to take. He did not want to be the lead singer, the new lead singer of Sabbath.
Could you imagine Glenn Hughes singing War Pigs or something? It just doesn't fly.
No, exactly. Yeah. It does not work for his vocal style.
No.
And Iommi and Hughes would do several records together after this that were under the Tony Iommi solo moniker.
Right.
So this is kind of the first of those, but it has the Black Sabbath name. But it is decidedly not a Black Sabbath record when you listen to it. It's a little more 80s. It is more heavy metal, but it's you can tell that it was not recorded with the Black Sabbath brand in mind.
No.
And that's why it's Black Sabbath featuring Tony Iommi. And the lineup.
So let me just stop you there for a second. If it's Black Sabbath featuring Tony Iommi, it's basically just a Tony Iommi solo album because there's nobody else there. It's an odd title for. Yeah. I remember I was with Rob when he picked this up. Not in 86 when it came out. I didn't know Rob until the following year. But I remember we went to a store one day and he picked it up and he goes to me, Black Sabbath featuring Tony Iommi. I said, yeah, that's the Tony Iommi and Friends album. He goes, why put their fucking title on there? I said, I don't know. But so that's what it's always been known as, Tony Iommi and Friends, like a in-joke sort of thing. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and that's kind of what it is. But Glenn's involvement in the band would be very short-lived. He started the tour with the band as Black Sabbath, and it ended mid-tour when he got drunk and messed with some stage manager or something, and he got his face punched in, and his nose was broken, and he couldn't sing. But the lineup on this one is you have Glenn on vocals, Tony Iommi guitar, Dave Spitz on bass guitar, who is the brother of Dan Spitz from mm-hmm. Anthrax.
Yep.
You have current KISS drummer Eric Singer on drums.
Yep.
And Jeff Nichols on keyboards, who just died of lung cancer this year.
Yeah.
Who played with Black Sabbath for a very long time before Adam Wakeman, Rick Wakeman's son, took over.
Oh, Rick King Arthur on Ice Wakeman. Okay.
Yeah.
You'll never live that down with me.
And the track listing, you have 9 songs. You have In for the Kill, No Stranger to Love, Turn to Stone, Sphinx, The Guardian, which is basically the Stonehenge of this album.
Yeah.
Seventh Star, Danger Zone, not to be confused with the Kenny Loggins song, Heart Like a Wheel, Angry Heart, and End Memory. So, John, what did you think of Seventh Star?
Oh, boy, it's pretty bad. It's unfortunately it's a Black Sabbath album, and I like Sabbath a lot, but this is the one Black Sabbath album I was laughing at. So it's just like it's not really a Black Sabbath album. It's a product of its time. It's at mid 80s, very light high treble production that I can't stand from 80s albums, and it's just not good. But I did get some laughs out of Danger Zone. That was just so hokey that.
John was sitting there in his laser craze friend voice going, it's not Doom laden.
No?
Where's the Doom?
It's not as good as Heaven and Hell.
It doesn't sound like the Ramones.
It's no Rob Rules.
It's hard to argue with that. Stuart, what about you?
I gotta say, I really liked it a lot. I really enjoyed it quite a bit. I expected nothing from it. I've never heard it before, to be honest with you. Like I said, seen it around since the day it pretty much came out, but just never bothered because, like I said, the whole Tony Iommi and Friends, I'm like, I don't care. But put it on, I'm like, okay, yeah, it's hokey 80s metal. It's not true Sabbath sounding. I really enjoyed it, actually, quite a bit. I was pleasantly surprised.
It has some good bluesy songs on there, like Heart Like a Wheel, I think is a good one. Seventh Star is a good atmosphere, you know. You have some really cheesy songs, No Stranger to Love. If you want to cringe, watch the music video for that. It's Tony Iommi in his eyeliner. Like, in his autobiography, Tony Iommi was even like, what's going on? When he was doing that, he was like, oh, this is terrible.
This is that era where you could see once cool bands like The Damned just look like utter fools on music videos. Robert Plant looks terrible in music videos. They did not know how to visually grasp that MTV new wave, post new wave sort of thing in the mid 80s.
Like just Dave Vanian and the Eloise like videos.
It's nightmare. So I was stunned how good they were live when I saw them open for the Misfits. They blew the Misfits off the stage. I would never know because I was seeing all those music videos where they just looked dweeby.
Yeah, but Dave Vanian was rocking the Bride of Frankenstein hairdo at the time.
Yeah. It's just, and that's a lot of them. They were all dressing up like pirates.
Yeah, he really looked like the Bride of Frankenstein. Like,
trying to look like white versions of Prince. I don't know. I have no idea.
For me, I mean, I think it's pretty... I mean, there are some songs on it I like, but it's definitely a product of its time. Like,
I tell you this, Hunter, you ain't gonna pull it out and do push-ups to it, like every. You're gonna work out to this album.
I definitely don't do push-ups to it the way I do to Heaven and Hell. You know,
nah, like with not those at all. You're not fat gonna do riffs. Push-ups.
You know, those big fat Tony Iommi riffs. You're like, yes.
I actually do. Treadmill. I do the treadmill to the speed of the first Black Sabbath album.
I mean, yeah. The way I see it, if I can do Hindu squats to Sabbath, then I can't do them to this. It's not a good Sabbath record or a good.
No, I think that's a fair assessment. So, do you have a favorite song on this, John? What would you rate it?
I was laughing my ass off at Danger Zone, so I'm going to say that, and I give it about a 4.
Nice. Okay, Stuart, what about you?
It's a 6.5 for me, which makes it the highest rated album so far. And I did like In for the Kill, and I liked Angry Heart, actually.
Angry Heart's not bad, yeah.
Yeah, it stuck out. It's like, oh, cool track. I like it.
For me, I'd give it about a 6. I mean, I kind of like it. I mean, it's not great, but... I mean, I kind of have a certain guilty pleasure with this one. I think Heart Like a Wheel's my favorite. I like the sort of bluesy jamminess of it. But yeah, it. I almost think of this as a Tony Iommi solo record. And if you want to delve further into Glenn and Tony's work together, they did the Depp Sessions, which was released officially in 2004. It was recorded in 96, but it was sort of passed around as a bootleg for a while. And actually, Glenn would use some of that on he would use some songs from it on some of his solo records like Gone. That's a good one if you like that. And also one that's kind of cheesy, but I like anyway, is Fused, the Iommi Hughes record, which is it's big, fat Iommi riffs with Glenn singing over them. It's a lot of fun. It's cheesy as hell, but I like it. So, but Glenn's career would kind of take a massive nosedive after this. And he wouldn't really get back on his feet till he revived his solo career and he got off drugs. But he started a band, a supergroup really, called Black Country Communion. With sort of blues guitar. He's kind of the modern day Eric Clapton, I guess you could say, is Joe Bonamassa. And you also have Jason Bonham, son of John Bonham, on drums, and Derek Sherinian, formerly of Dream Theater, on keyboards. So this was kind of a big sort of super group. And the next album we're going to talk about is from 2010. It's the self-titled Black Country Communion record. And it's, you know, the lineup I just mentioned, and the track listing is Black Country, One Last Soul, The Great Divide, Down Again, Beggar Man, Song of Yesterday, No Time, Medusa, which is the trapeze song, mm-hmm. Revolution in Me, Stand at the Burning Tree, Sister Jane, and Too Late for the Sun. John, what'd you think of Black Country Communion? This is the very modern, this is a big leap ahead in time. What'd you think?
It was interesting because I'd never heard of them, and I didn't even know they were this super group. But I thought it was pretty decent. It reminded me of the mid-80s when I was super going through that teen phase of really getting into Led Zeppelin's records, and then suddenly on the radio there was Whitesnake doing pretty heavy Zep ripoffs, and Kingdom Come, which we were always calling Kingdom Clone, and I think even Cinderella had a Zep sound-alike track out at the same time, and so did Great White. So it kind of reminded me of that era, but a bit more professional, better playing, better musicianship. It was pretty decent. I was surprised. You know, some of the production could get a little Velvet Revolver-esque or whatever, but yeah. Otherwise I still liked it. You know, it's a decent album. I was surprised. I was just surprised I didn't even hear of them. But, you know, the truth is I've really kind of cut off new rock music in my listening in recent years. And I don't know why. I just kind of have, you know, there's a new Darkness record. I'll listen to it. But otherwise there could be new good bands and I wouldn't know.
But so you overall enjoyed delving into this one?
Yeah, it was a nice surprise. I didn't know anything about them and listened to it. And I was like, oh, this is pretty decent. You know, I just feel like I almost feel like I'm too old to get enthusiastic about new rock acts or super groups, but this is fun to listen to. I didn't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I remember I heard of them because a guy at my job in Memphis was like, oh man, like he knew I liked rock music, and he was like, you gotta listen to this band, Black Country Communities, this guy from Deep Purple and Jason Bonham. Like he was like, you gotta hear it, and I listened to it. I was like, yeah, it's pretty good. And I really enjoyed it. Stuart, what about you? I mean, I know I introduced you to this band.
What was your?
And I think we bought the CD. I think we went to a store.
It's on my shelf, my friend.
Yeah. And so what do you think?
Oh, I love it, man.
Yeah.
Love it. And it introduced me to Joe Bonamassa as well, which you did as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had.
Yeah, I like Joe quite a bit.
Heard the name quite a bit and didn't really know what he was like. I heard, you know, the sort of plaudits that the guy was getting, and then you showed me that one woman who was on that video with him, and I'm
Beth Hart.
That's it, and I'm like, what's so good about this guy? Then you played Black Country. I'm like, okay, now yeah. I know why he's this good. Yeah,
yeah, like he does a lot of the big band stuff. Like he did this Beth thing with Beth Hart in Amsterdam. That's like a lot of big band like stuff, and you know he's done like live shows where he does like all like Muddy Waters and.
Yeah,
Howlin' Wolf, but he does them kind of big band style, and yeah, he's kind of like a Clapton or something where he like worships the old blues stuff and incorporates it into his music. But Bonamassa is very popular with like kind of the older crowd. Like anytime when I was working at CD Source, I would see a guy in a suit walk in, like a guy in a coat and tie.
Yeah.
Or a business suit or something, and I would immediately go, okay, that guy's a Bonamassa fan. No, yeah, I'm serious.
He's for the PBS kind of older yuppie blues jack off crowd.
Yeah, no, it's true. Like I would go up to them and I'd be like, hey, you like Joe Bonamassa? And they'd be like, yeah, I do. And I'd say, you like Black Country Communion? And if they said no, I'd go, well, let me show you something, my friend. And then I would they'd inevitably walk out with some Black Country Communion CDs. Mm-hmm. And later, and also when the California Breed record came out, I would also say, well, you like Black Country Communion? They'd say, yeah. And I'd say, have you listened to California Breed? And then they would walk out with that. And what's funny is they would call the store later and thank me for selling it to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so I was very good. But what's fun at selling those people, but what's funny is one of Glenn Hughes' buddies, who is heavily quoted in his autobiography, came in the store. And he overheard me talking about Glenn Hughes with a customer. And he came up to me and he was like, hey, man, I'm actually like really good friends with Glenn Hughes. And he showed me pictures of him and Glenn like on his phone and him and Tony Iommi and all these people. And he was telling me stories for a long time. Everybody at this, like the manager was like, I wanted to tell you to get back to work, but I knew you were in hog heaven, right? So I
hog heaven.
I was talking to him for like 30 minutes. but he was very excited. But I mean, when the guy told me his name, he was like, oh, I'm quoted in the book. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go look when I – and sure enough, that was him. That was quoted throughout it. Like he's been friends with Glenn since the Trapeze days. But yeah, he just was a customer of the store. And but yeah, I was very good at selling the Black Country Communion album and the California Breed record. I moved all of those. Like, we sold out of them because I was able to sell them to those people.
You're good at your craft.
Oh, I am. I am the kind of record store employee that you want. Like, there's this guy at Good Records. Whenever I walk in, he's like, "Hey, man, have you listened to this?" And he'll like play. He knows my taste, and he always knows what to sell me on. You want that guy working at your record store?
I want to ask you though: do you ever manage to sell those Seal remixes you played all day?
So Stuart's referencing one day in the store, the employees would rotate the picks as to what we would play. Like, he had to play something that was used because the idea was to sell it. And it couldn't be like abrasive heavy metal or prog or anything like that. It had to be something that was friendly for the store. So one day this guy was like, "Hey, we're going to play this album of Seal's." What was the song?
Crazy.
Crazy. Yes, it was Crazy. It was Seal's Crazy. And it was just remixes of Crazy. It was like six songs that were all Crazy remixes. And he goes, "And after I go through it, you're going to pick it as well." And I said, "Sounds good." And so this just was cycling through the store. And then I went up to the employee whose pick it was next. And I said, "Hey, your pick is going to be Seal's Crazy remix album." And she was like, "All right." People in the customers in the store were like confused. They were looking around.
If I was working here, you'd be coming to me like, "Oh, this is going to be your next pick." Be like, "No, it fucking isn't."
Yeah. I mean, it was funny though. Like, we were going up to the next person, be like, "Hey, you know this thing that's playing? You're picking it next."
I just pop on some fog hat just to crank it up a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
Black Sabbath 7-star.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, gosh. Yeah. So I actually put on Fused, the Iommi Hughes album one time, and everybody was like, "This is so cheesy." I was like, "I don't care."
No, really?
Yeah. Like, the riffs are just so, like, rockin'.
Yeah.
they're kind of laughable. But so, John, what would you give this album? What was your favorite song?
I'd give it a 7. It's very solid for what it is. I think I like The Great Divide.
Oh, yeah.
Quite a bit. And I actually like the first track, Black Country, somewhat. And, it's pretty good. Thick. Yeah. It's very solid. I mean, this kind of hit all the – it hit kind of all the points it needed to hit. You know, like, the drums are good, the bass is good, the guitar is good, the vocals good. You know, the lyrics are not embarrassing, so it's like it's good and solid. You know,
Stuart, what about you? What's your favorites? What would you give it?
All right, this is getting an 8 for me at least. All right, and I do like a lot of tracks on there. Like John said, Black Country. I like Great Divide as well, but I like my favorite is One Last Song. Fucking, that's an awesome song. That.
You're the one lasso. Yeah.
Glenn's vocals in this album is just stellar. Absolutely stellar.
Yeah, he is killing it on this album.
He really is.
So I think for me, I'd give it an 8 as well. I think it's a really strong record. And I mean, I think the whole album is strong. I really like the Medusa cover. I mean, I think it might be better than the one on Trapeze, you know, because Glenn's vocals are just
better. It's
got a
new coat of paint on it, so.
Yeah, it does. But I like you guys. I like the first. I think the first three songs are like perfect.
It's a 1-2-3 punch. You just
And Glenn's bass playing is just heavy. It's awesome. But
and it also helps you got the album mixed by Kevin Shirley, who's pretty much a genius.
Yeah, he is the producer on it. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah, the guy who basically took over from Martin Birch for Iron Maiden.
Yeah, and he did good work with them. But Black Country Communion has two more records before they broke up for the first time. They're actually recording a new album right now.
Yeah, bring it on, Hannah?
Yeah, that's going to be Glenn's next record. You have Black Country Communion 2, which I think is a little weaker than this one. I don't think it's as good, but Black their third record, Afterglow, I think is awesome.
Yeah, I know you really like that one a lot.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. I think that album is really, really good. Big Train, the opening is killer. You got This Is Your Time. I mean, it's a really good record. So after Black Country Communion broke up, Glenn formed a new band with Jason Bonham, and he got a really young guitar player named Andrew Watt to play with him. And I think Julian Lennon appears on this record as well. Mm. And it's called, the band is called California Breed. Very short lived. They broke up. And Jason, the reason is Jason Bonham left the band immediately afterward, and Glenn said he had no intention of continuing without Jason. And they did the tour with the guy, one of the drummers from Queens of the Stone Age. I can't remember his name, but they did one tour and that was it. But the album is from 2014, and spoiler alert, it was one of my favorite records of that year. I think it was actually Eddie Trunk's favorite album of that year. So.
Of course.
But you know why it was? Because the Winery Dogs didn't have an album that year.
Yeah, exactly. The Winery Dogs. You know, I'm actually the reason the Winery Dogs are together.
Yeah, don't we know that one?
I'm a really big fan. Anyway, so this album, you have 12 tracks. You have The Way, Sweet Tea, Chemical Rain, Midnight Oil, All Falls Down, The Gray, Days They Come, Spit You Out, Strong, Invisible, Scars, and Breathe. John, what'd you think of California Breed?
You know, strangely, I found this to be a bit of a step down or a step back after the previous album, which I thought was a real surprise. It's okay. But to me, it just sounds like one of those Velvet Revolver scenes.
Okay, yeah. Clean production. Very clean.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little too clean. I think that was the problem I had with it, was I felt it was too – it lacked that kind of deep, heavy sound that the previous album had. It's okay. It's nothing great. But strangely, I noticed this gets higher ratings among in critical corners than – some of the other albums I listened to for the show that I liked a lot more. So I don't know, you know, I'm not on the, not on the same wavelength as some of these other critics, but I thought Midnight Oil was, I think that was their single for it. And I thought that was okay. And Spit You Out, I thought was okay, but I wasn't crazy about this album for some, whatever reason. And it could be the production. I think you kind of nailed it right there.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a problem with a lot of new rock albums. Like, I have a friend who often says, he goes, "Oh, I don't listen to new rock albums." And I was like, "Oh, why?" And he goes, "Production's too clean."
I don't blame him.
I think he's you know, he has a valid complaint. Stuart, I'm curious, what did you think of California Breed?
Well, I'm with John. I thought it was a huge step back, actually. I wasn't fond of it, and I really wanted to like it. I think John pretty much encapsulated it all. It sounds like a Velvet Revolver album. It's just, I don't know what Glenn's thinking was at the time, why he went for this sound. Yeah, a letdown, actually. After the first track, The Way, which I thought was great, I thought, here we go. You know, it's going to be like another kick-ass Glenn Hughes album. I'm like, I'm not liking this much at all. And it just went down and down from there. So, yeah. Black Country Communion, it ain't. Let's say that.
No, I think I agree with you guys. I like the – I mean, okay. I like it a lot more than you guys do. I think that – I mean, I like a lot of the songs on it a lot. I like The Way. Sweet Tea's pretty cheesy.
It is, really.
But, you know, it's kind of fun. Midnight Oil, The Gray. I think The Gray is a lot of fun. But, yeah, I mean, I think all your complaints are valid, really.
Okay.
I think I just enjoy it more. So, John, what would you give it in terms of favorite song and rating?
Gosh, for this one, favorite song, I would say, I've got to just, let's see, I wasn't crazy about it. You know what? I think The Gray was decent, and I like Spit You Out.
Yeah,
and The Gray's okay, a fun but one. It's just the I found the production to be a real turnoff on this, so I'm only giving it like a 5. I think, and this is probably led to me realizing why I don't listen to a lot of new rock stuff is the production is shit. So,
okay, Stuart.
Yeah, 5 for me as well. So, and favorite track was the first one, The Way.
Mm.
Yeah, BAFTA, I just struggled a bit.
I'm going to give it a 7. I liked it more than you guys did. But I liked The Gray. I like Chemical Rain. I mean, not Chemical Rain, sorry. Midnight Oil. I think it's a fun record, but I do agree that the production kind of makes it suffer a bit. So California Breed broke up after this. So this was very short-lived, just a one-off band. So Glenn would go back. This is his newest record, released last year in October, Resonate. This one is... It has him doing a lot of the instruments, but you also have Soren Anderson on guitar. You have two drummers. You have Pontus Ingborg doing the vast majority of the drumming, but you also have Chad Smith from the Red Hot Chili Peppers doing the drums on tracks 1 and 11. And the track listing is Heavy, My Town, Flow, Let It Shine, Steady, God of Money, How Long, When I Fall, Landmine, Stumble and Go, and Long Time Gone. So what did you think of this one? This one, I think, and Glenn said ahead of time that this one was going to be more of a heavy metal record. He said it was going to be a heavy album, that it was, going to be more in that vein. What'd you think of it, John?
I think it's pretty good, except for the songwriting is a little too simple, but, yeah, sometimes I feel like these guys should contract songwriting houses like they do in Nashville for country music, because sometimes I just feel like the lyrics are pretty weak. But it's very well produced. I think it's better produced than the California Breed album.
Oh, definitely.
Sounds really good. Sounds great on the heavy. Sounds great on the treble. I mean, it's even despite the slick production, I dig it. And I like that he mixed up the funk a little more, and there's a kind of return of the soulful a lot of the soulful stuff. So I think it's a solid record. I thought it was surprisingly good.
Stuart, what about you?
One word for this. Awesome. I hadn't heard it until we prepped for this, but oh, it was fucking great. Really, really blown away how good it was. I'm with you. I did hear Glenn as well say that it was going to be the heaviest thing he's ever done, and I'm like, oh, okay, you know, mm-hmm. Wait and see what you know.
People say that a lot.
People say it a lot, and in the definition of what Glenn Hughes means by heavy, I mean, who knows? I'm not, judging the man by any stretch, but I'm just saying I don't know what his definition of heavy compared to what I think is. But yeah, he wasn't joking when he said it was heavy. I'm like, holy shit, this is a fucking good album. I gotta say that, and one, yeah. I can revisit very easily as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a step up from.
Oh, it's
California
a huge
Breed.
Leap forward from California Breed.
And I think like. You even get like some really strong like Sabbath type stuff on there, like
yeah,
Flow.
Yeah,
like Flow is a better Black Sabbath song than anything on 13.
Oh yeah,
you know? But yeah, it's definitely has that mix again of the kind of doom metal and funk that you. It kind of brings us full circle a little bit to Medusa, where you get sort of that best of both worlds with the doom metal and the soul music.
This is probably the album that Tony Iommi wishes he had done with Seven Star. On Seven Star, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I really, really, really want to see Glenn Hughes do something like this live, but he doesn't really come down here that much when he tours America. It's usually like the coast markets.
Yeah, he was, like I said at the start of the show, he was here in Melbourne.
Yeah.
About a week and a half back doing only the 50 Years of Cream sort of retrospect it was.
Oh, that's right. It was, yeah. I remember you mentioning that now.
I'm like, oh, shit. He's playing at Hamer Hall, which is, God, not far from where I work at all. So had I known that he was there, I would have actually taken the day off, or I had the day off or something like that. I would have gone, but no, well, what are you going to do? I just hope he does come back as a solo artist on this,
yeah.
on this album, because I will go for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's really strong, like Heavy, Flow, like Let It Shine. You know, Landmines is a song I like a lot.
And the good thing as well, when if you couldn't find where Hamer Hall was, if you were unfamiliar, you just all you to follow is the yellow brick road of emojis to the front door on the ground with little smiley faces and thumbs ups and all that sort of stuff.
Yes, yes. I mean, but. I don't know. Like, Glenn, he just, in his old age, he hasn't been slowing down at all.
Far from it. And what was it we should mention that, I think before the California Breed album, or just, yeah, before he recorded, He had a heart attack or something like that, didn't he?
He had heart surgery.
Heart surgery, that's it, yes.
Yeah, no, he did. He had a heart attack when he was in his drug days.
Yeah.
But no, he was on tour and he had to be rushed to the hospital because he needed emergency heart surgery. But, you know, he's bounced back from that. And he's recording and touring pretty regularly.
And the thing is, as well, when you listen to Glenn Hughes give interviews, he's so positive. Like, this is a guy who's truly been given a second chance and he's enjoying every minute of life that he's got.
Yeah. No, he really is. I mean, he's very much like, he's very active in the recovery community.
Yeah.
I think that has a lot to do with it. Yeah. I mean, I think that really gives him that.
He's not like listening to some other recording artists or musicians who just give interviews and go, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah. He's like very bouncy and, you know, very thankful.
He interacts with his fans on social media. Like
he really does. Yeah, when I had my Twitter account before I couldn't be bothered reactivating it, I tweeted to him something about the tax system or something in America. Or something about politics in the UK. And he said he left the UK in about 72 or 73 or something like that to go live in America or shortly just after Deep Purple, I think it was. Because he said the tax system in Britain was killing him. And
They all left. Yeah,
they probably did.
They all left because I was wondering why John Barry did not score a lot of the 70s James Bond movies. And it turns out it's because of tax issues. He left England.
Yeah.
Because they were taxing entertainers at like 90%.
Yeah, I remember Michael Caine saying the same thing as well. He just left because Britain was just taxing the daylights out of him.
Imagine that. Yeah. You get greedy and people leave. Hmm.
Yeah, it's called capital flight.
Yeah. Yeah. It really is.
But, yeah, Glenn's very interactive on social media. Like, you know, if you interact with him, he will – it's likely he'll respond. Like, he's responded to me. He's responded to Stu.
Mm.
You know, he's very – you know, engaged with his fans.
Yeah. The two people who hear the most on interviews who are the most thankful for the lives they got and their careers they got and the longevity they've ever had are Glenn Hughes and David Coverdale, actually.
Yeah. Coverdale's
a great interview as well. He's.
But anyway, so John, what would you say is your favorite song / rating on this?
Landmines was, I thought, the best.
Oh, good.
It was pretty good, outstanding.
Good pick.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd give this an 8. This is really good. This is a total surprise.
All right, Stu, what about you?
I'm actually going to give it an 8.5. I think it was probably my favorite a lot, even over the Black Country. Just a tad over the Black Country album. Because I was so blown away how good it was. I was like, wow, this is... And it wasn't one or two songs and it dipped after that. It just pretty much held up from most of the album, I'd say about a good more than 3/4 of it. So, and you got to take in the fact that the guy's like 64. This is a fair effort for a guy in his near mid 60s, you know. So, and the sound on it is great. It is heavy, and it's I'm going to give it an 8.5. I really enjoy it. And Flo's my favorite as well. I'm like, wow, this is like a fucking Sabbath track. Like you were saying beforehand, I'm like, oh man, the guy's still in my thunder by saying it, but yeah, we're in tune with each other.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, I like the first track as well, Heavy. So yeah, I like it a lot. I'm super impressed how good it is. Really, really impressed.
Well, I would give it an 8 as well. I'll say Flo and Landmines are my favorite songs. I mean, I think it's a really strong record. It was one of my favorite albums of 2016. Was definitely high up there. I think, you know, this guy really, I mean, I think he's really earned his stripes when it comes to his nickname, like the Voice of Rock, just the way he's only improved in his age. Like, you know, we did Megadeth last week and, you know, Dave's vocal register has dropped. You know, and Dave's doing the Alice Cooper thing. You know, he's not really, you know, a vocalist. But, you know, that's what happens to most singers. You know, they, you know, their voice decays and blah, blah, blah. But it just seems like Glenn's only gets bigger.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I picked him, really, is because he's kind of a comeback kid, really.
And he's more, one of the more versatile vocalists in heavy rock who can pull off a solo album as well, or you know, funk.
He can do like a soul album, a funk album. He can do a heavy metal. He can do doom metal. You know, he's good at all.
Yeah, pretty much. He's a unique talent.
Yeah, I cannot wait for the new Black Country Communion album. And
oh,
I'm
with you. I'm with you 100%. I cannot wait.
You know that, and that album, because that band has gained a following and a reputation. You know, there's going to be a big tour, and I have to see them on that tour.
Yeah.
When it happens. I mean, I've got to check it out. I mean, it's you know, I really hope they come here, you know, somewhere I can see them.
Okay. Very cool.
All right.
I'm sure when you do go and see them, you'll let me know all about it if they come to town. Yeah. But like, hey, Stu, guess he's coming to town. Yeah, Black Country. Great. Have fun. I won't be there, unfortunately.
All right. So that's Glenn Hughes. You know, and there's a lot of albums – if you want to get into Glenn Hughes to listen to, you know, his stuff with Tony Iommi is worth checking out. You know, his albums with Deep Purple. He has a ton of solo albums. I mean, there's so many records he's done that we did not get to. And Hughes Thrall is one that's sort of a curiosity item that's worth checking out. So, yeah, I mean, he's been all over the place. And actually, you know what's funny is, speaking of Tony Iommi, is he did the last Heaven and Hell shows when Dio died.
Huh.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, if you look up on YouTube, you can see him doing the last Heaven and Hell shows. And he actually sang the song Catch the Rainbow at Dio's funeral.
Huh.
Which, if you pick up the Dio tribute album, the benefit record they did for colon cancer... they recorded a version of it with him that is absolutely stunning.
Jeez.
Cool.
Yeah, really good. So there's a lot to listen to with Glenn Hughes. I mean, he's done a lot. I mean, for a guy who burned up about a decade in drug use and really wasted a lot of his potential, he's really made up for it, like more so than most artists.
And there's no signs of him slowing down either.
No, he just keeps going. Like yeah. he's a machine. He has heart surgery, heart attack, whatever, you know, keeps going.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Very good.
Well, another week of Rock Month in the band, in the bag, in the band. That works too.
Yeah, the Henry Rollins moment. They get in the van.
Get in the van. So, yeah. Next week, we have another band, and then we'll do our collective pick. We don't even know what it is yet. Figure it out. It'll probably be like Opal Blue or Magma, something like that.
We should make it easy and quick and just say, oh, the Power Station or something.
or Mountain. Just do the two Mountain albums.
Mountain.
It's going to be Lips, Inc. That's what we're going to do.
No, it'd be Bronski Beats One album. It'd be The Age of Consent, and that's it. That one.
Pet Shop Boys, you know, West End Girls, that's it.
Yeah.
Mike Guar did a great cover of that song.
Sisters of Mercy. I think there's only two albums there.
Sisters of Mercy.
It'll be Joy Division.
Joy Division, yeah.
Stopping right at the death. Right at the suicide.
Yeah.
It's not a bad idea. Just do Joy Division.
No. I'll be sick that week. You want to do Joy Division? Do it on a week outside of Rock Pump where I'm not there. Go for it. Quite welcome to.
We'll just sing a collective chorus of Dead Souls or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. They keep calling me.
Yeah.
Let's do the Jesus Lizard Man.
So, everybody, MidnightMovieCowboys.com. If you like the show, if you feel financially inclined, click on the PayPal button and donate to us. We very much appreciate it. Thank you very much for
donating. If you make a nice hefty donation of say $15 or more, you're going to get some exclusive shows heading your way soon.
Believe me, if you donate to us, you get some bigly content. but let's say you don't really want to give us money, but you like the show. go to iTunes, rate and review us. That just takes a few seconds/minutes of your time.
Or if you listen to us on Stitcher, give us a review there.
Yeah, yeah. Anywhere you listen to us, rate, review, do whatever. You know, that really helps the show. I mean, that's just as good.
Gets
the word out, my man. You know, look us up on Facebook. We have our Midnight Movie Cowboys Facebook group. It's crazy. It's wild. Lots of shit posting. So get up in that. And
almost every new member leaves within a week. It's great.
They just walk in and they go, nope.
Because somebody invited them and they don't listen to the show. So
I like to liken the Facebook.
A little caught off guard.
Yeah, I like to liken the Facebook page to Steve Guttenberg walking into the Blue Oyster Bar. It's like, ooh, no.
It's true. Anyway, well, anything else to add, gentlemen?
Glenn Hughes rocks.
Glenn Hughes does rock. He is the voice of rock, my friends.
Yes, he is. Can't argue that one at all.
Mm.
And I'm with you. I absolutely cannot wait to see what they can pull out with this new Black Country album. I'm really, really excited to hear it.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
I'm going to go listen to Deep Purple.
Go listen to Burn.
Yeah, that's what I want to listen to. Burn. I haven't listened to it in years.
Yeah, dude, Ian Pace rips it up on the drums on the album. Like, he's playing his ass off. It's great.
Yeah, there's a lot of Deep Purple that I want to go back and listen to that doesn't get much exposure these days.
Rock.
I'm going to go very Eddie Trunk on Deep Purple probably in the next few weeks.
Going to go listen to Bananas. Is that their album, Hana? Bananas? They do one called that?
I don't know.
There was a cassette. There was a Deep Purple cassette that I played the hell out of. It was a House of Blue Light. I think that was the album. It was,
Yeah, that was the one.
Shit out of my cassette. God.
Well, you need to crank up Perfect Strangers. That's
Perfect Strangers is awesome.
A great fucking album. Yeah. That's the first band I ever saw live, Deep Purple in 84. December 84, on the reunion tour.
Very good.
And also the friggin' loudest I've ever seen as well, I think. Next to the Melvins. I think the Melvins and Deep Purple were the two loudest I've ever heard in my lifetime.
All right, guys. Well, I think that's it. So if anybody's got nothing else to add, I'm going to go ahead and say adios.
I'll say Magadog.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.